The pharmaceutical industry is a complex and fascinating field. It takes countless of people to bring a high-quality product to the market. In the Qualitox podcast, I bring to you leaders, experts, and innovators who will share their experiences and explain to us how they do it. Hello, Vladko. Welcome to the Qualitox podcast. Really amazing to have you on the show. Really happy that you came. And our topic today is equipment qualification. How are you doing, Vlad?
I'm very well. Thank you, Jan. Thank you for having me on Qualitox podcast. It's very nice to be part of this series of podcasts with addressing issues within the pharmaceutical industry. So I'm happy to be here today and discuss this topic with you. Hopefully it will be useful for everyone that listens.
Yeah, I really hope so. And the equipment qualification is a quite elaborate topic and a very important topic, and it is a series of actions, and it's sometimes it's a project for itself to qualify equipment. So what is equipment qualification basically? So I think today maybe it would be a good idea maybe to go to the basics and really talk about different aspects.
A little bit of my background is that I worked at the production of solid dosage forms before moving to the UK at the company. And then I took on this role that was more operational and quality assurance lead that made sure that all the processes are in accordance with the quality policies and procedures within the quality management system of the company. In this capacity, I was also included in a number of projects that were including equipment qualification and production startup. So I would always look at the equipment qualification as one step or pre-condition in means of making sure that the industry, the company was producing within the industry standards. Having said that, that means that the way I understand it and try to present it is that one has to have qualified facilities and qualified systems, utilities, and then to put equipment in them and then to qualify the equipment so that to be able to validate processes on that equipment and then to assure that during the lifetime, the life cycle of a product, everything that was every preconditions were in line so that the state of control and the quality of the product would be assured throughout the whole life cycle. So there are definitions about equipment qualification, and it's a series of activities documented according to procedures, according to standards that are assuring all these steps. But mainly it means that it's an activity and documented activity within the quality system that will assure that the equipment is doing what is intended to do. And there are a number of guidelines, regulatory guidelines, and also industry practices that one can refer to when addressing the issue of equipment qualification. That is the Eudralex Volume 4. There is Annex 15, which is addressing equipment qualification and validations. And also, it might make sense to connect it to Annex 11, which is computerized systems. But that's completely different topic, and I think that some you have already addressed that with one of your guests in the podcast,
right?
As well as the Orange Guide, which is the British GMP guideline, is also addressing or including Annex 15, and the FDA code for federal regulations, Part 21 is. Subpart D is addressing the equipment and all the preconditions that need to be met in order to start producing or to use that equipment for production of medicines. So it's a documented process within the quality management system that is making sure that that the equipment is designed, installed, and operational in a way and performing in a way that is according to the scale, to the process, to the characteristics of the medicinal product. And it's also run later on in the after the qualifications, quality management system asks for it to be run by educated, by trained personnel, so that you circle the whole process in assuring the state of control, which is also according to the ICHQ 10 for pharmaceutical quality system, which requires that all the activities within the pharmaceutical industry will be executed, or the state of control will be secured or assured by the organization. So when we are talking about qualification, there is also one other guideline that is called ISPE baseline guide for commissioning and qualification from June 2019, which is not a regulatory standard, but it's kind of industry technical standard that is providing more details in means of how to address this regulatory, how to meet the regulatory standard. There are professionals that are relying on this standard, and there are others that just don't rely as much as to it, but then they're relying on their own quality policies, which have to be very wide and thorough to support the whole process. So equipment qualification, the word qualification is usually used for when you're addressing equipment, so that the equipment is qualified, the processes, either production or cleaning processes, are validated. And then we talk about calibration of all the sensors or measuring instruments that are part of the equipment. Historically, the validations and the equipment qualification came, I think, within the late 70s from the FDA, because they have seen several cases of within the sterile production facilities that were failing to assure the sterility of the products, and resulted with several deaths as well. It's also coming from the very similar period of time regarding the medical devices, when there wasn't validated process for therapeutic device, and that also produced unwanted effects and resulted with several deaths. But then that raised the level for the industry and for the community to start setting standards as of how to assure that the equipment is doing what is it meant to doing in means of assuring the quality of the processes and quality of the products and stability and efficacy of the products, as well as retaining this state of control within the whole activity. So within the last few years, we have seen trend by, and this has been presented, that the most common findings of regulatory inspections of non-conformances regarding equipment are either not performing all the steps of equipment qualification properly, or not documenting these steps properly. In my experience, I have seen, and I'm going to address all these phases separately, I have seen that within the last few years, we have seen, on my job position, I have seen that inspectors are asking for to check the documents, starting from the user requirement specification, and then dig in if they feel that something is amiss or going wrong. So the user requirement specification has become a document that is being checked on a regular basis by the inspectors. And I have been a little bit amused to find out that not every organization has user requirement specification, and this is one of the reasons why it has become an issue for regulatory inspectors, so that to check that you're following the Annex 15 guideline in means of the steps needed to be taken for equipment qualification and then process validation. So the process of equipment qualification formally starts with writing the user requirement specification, which is a document that, as it says, it needs to start from the final user of the equipment. But sometimes it contains technical terms that will need help from other technical departments, engineering, and it will require a multifunctional team effort, because it will have to address other issues like validation master plan changes. So there will probably, when you're introducing new equipment or new technology in already existing facility, it will need to go through change control process. It will need to be approved, and it will need to address first risk assessment of all the change, and then it will need to address very specific points. For example, it will need to change the site master file. It will, in means of validation master plan, it will need to follow the validation master plan, which is a document within the quality system that is also addressed within Annex 15, which states the ways, the levels, the control strategies as a guideline, the list of equipments, their qualification status, and how to properly address all these issues in means of introducing new equipment into an existing facility. If you're working as a greenfield investment and you're introducing new equipment, it's probably a huge project, and this will be going hand in hand with the development of all these quality documents like validation master plan. So you're developing validation master plan as you're planning the capacity building of equipment. But otherwise, if there is an existing facility and you're introducing new technology or new equipment, you will need to assess the risks of introducing this, and then make the needed changes through change control system. And that is one of the reasons why it's so interesting for inspectors, because if you go through the URS and go through the process of qualification, you can then have a glimpse into the whole vitality of the whole quality management system, because it touches the risk assessment, it touches your technical understanding of the equipment, of the technology, of the processes, and also it tests the knowledge and the awareness with the professionals in that organization about all the upcoming issues. I'm saying this because when you're introducing new equipment with an existing facility, that means that facility, that those clean rooms need to have been qualified previously. So there is an existing HVAC there, HVAC. Depending what is the robustness or volume of this new equipment, it might change the patterns of air movement, of the whether we have still laminar flow of air and exchange of air, whether there is turbulent movement. It might affect the whole volume of the space, of the room, of the clean room. So it might change the number of exchanges of air per hour. So it needs to be readdressed again. I mean, this might not be the case, but when one is doing this equipment qualification always has to have in mind the effects that, or what all other issues are affected by introducing new equipment.
Right. So you do a lot of risk management here. So you mentioned that before you start your qualification, you need to do an extensive risk analysis, and probably even before you decide to buy the new equipment or do some changes in it. So before you do any change, you should first do the risk analysis and think about all the aspects and what can be impacted by this change. Like you said, when you change the equipment and the type of the floor, it can change the airflow, it can play a different role with contamination and so on and so on.
It can change the lighting. It might need to be assessed how far from the walls it can be. These are practical issues. These are addressed with the existing GMP guides and NX15 and the FDA subpart D. But they only say the equipment space should be, I'm not quoting, this is my paraphrasing it.
Should be designed that you have enough space.
Space, right, to clean, to maintain,
and so on. And like most of the guidelines, they're quite short and they're quite general. Then you need to look at your best practice of the industry and make sure that it's really conforms with the standards of the industry.
It's working for you as well, because you don't want to just fulfill the standards, but the people that are going to do the operation of that equipment day by day need to be, except for these regulatory standards, they need to be, you know, their health and safety standards as well. So room qualification will need certain light. There will be certain safety issues with the equipment that will need to have been addressed in a different manner, not within the, I mean, some of them are addressed with the equipment qualification, but not all of them. And I think that it's even before starting to think about the project or to start writing the URS, you need to make a business case. You need to understand why you need this equipment. You need to understand what are the technology standards of current technology standards of the industry, what is the equipment producers are offering on the market, whether you need it or not. Now it's more and more important to have computerized systems that are going to guide the equipment, but also will retain data, audit trails and files from the process, trends as well. There will be electronic verification, so it falls under the computerized system validation. But it's a project that needs to address all these issues, and one needs to be very, very open and communicate all these issues with all the relevant departments, so that all the activities are done in a proper way and in a timely manner, that it will not hold the production. I will address several. Before going on with the structure of the equipment qualification, we'll address several potential problems that one might have with installing new equipment. Sometimes this equipment is very robust equipment. Sometimes parts of equipment cannot be dismantled to smaller pieces. Then you need to transport this equipment with an existing department consisting of clean rooms. So you need to transport something from outside through corridors or something places to get to your room. And that is also requiring risk assessment in means of how it affects the cleanliness of the corridors, how you're going to, you need to have a plan how to introduce this equipment through the, how you're transporting it. It might be going to a second or third level and you need some elevators, whether they're capable of doing that, or you need some external tools to do that, and yet again to be aware of the state of control of the system all the time, reiteratively, to readdress it all the time, to see whether any activity is affecting it. I'm saying this here because you have to be aware, but planning of for new equipment, you have to be aware of all these things. You do the risk assessments, then you write the user requirement specification, which is a structured document, and it states the scope of the user requirement specification, what is in scope, what is out of scope, the roles and responsibilities, some technical, some legal requirements, change controls that need to be addressed within the starting of the process, approval of the document, and what will go next. When you offer this user requirement specification as a document, it now is part of the quality management system, and it's part of the documentation for this project. It will probably be good to mention here that writing user requirement specification trends or recommendations now are that user requirement specifications is not addressing technically detailed requirements, but it's rather addressing what you need to achieve with this equipment. So then it's not too specific, but it's not too general. It's specific enough to tell the potential vendors what you need, but it's also giving them a space within that range to find the best solution for you. They will probably come back with questions about whether you need whether you have any connections for gases, for compressed air, for purified water, for electricity, for earthing, for electrostatically, whether you need X-proof equipment and so on. So then they will be working what kind of material you're working with, whether it needs to be sterile, whether it needs to be the viscosity of the material, if it's some kind of mixer, or the capacity of the machine as well. You're addressing all these things with the user requirement specification, and then you receive the functional design specification, which is kind of I've seen this in several forms. It's sometimes called functional design specification, sometimes called functional requirement specification. And it's kind of communicating between the people that the industry, the engineering team that is offering this, and the potential vendors. So they're giving you back this functional design specification, which now addresses like conceptual design of the equipment. It addresses all your requirements and their technical solutions to your requirements. And then it is also providing you with a PID and diagrams that are conceptual in means of how they're going to connect all these different units of the equipment. The thing is that after you've accepted this or approved this design specification, every change that is done to the user requirement specification needs to go through the control change control system, because you might within the project you might think that now you have better understanding of the process, or you have decided that you need to upgrade something so that it is to be in line with other parallel projects and so on and so on, and so. After that, you have to have vital and viable change control system in place to address all the issues that are regarding this. After accepting the offer of one of this or going through with one of the vendors that are going to do this, you have technical agreement that addresses the responsibilities, roles, timelines, possible legal issues in means of whatever that means for both organizations, and then some business aspects in means of when you pay how much and so on and so on. I strongly recommend, and this might not be so important for big pharma companies because they have very strong engineering and QA validation teams, and they are perfectly capable of understanding the technology and then addressing all these qualification issues, even writing qualification protocols for themselves. But I strongly advise for smaller companies that the qualification documentation be part of the whole project, so that you buy that document. I don't know whether this is now, I have the impression that it's a standard in the industry that you get the documentation, but sometimes it might need to be addressed specifically and say that the documentation, the protocols for equipment qualification is part of the whole project. And if possible, and this is also a recommendation coming from my experience, if possible, within this user requirement specification, and especially when you're introducing a new technology, so new type of process that the organization is not have not been familiar with, is always put in some training within the whole project, because the vendor that is providing this equipment is usually having process engineers and other types of engineers that might help you to set up your first steps within establishing your own process and better understanding of the process as well. Having said that, the next step is a factory acceptance test, which is done. So following the project, it will give you some time frame to prepare properly and accordingly regarding the space that you want to use for this equipment, regarding all these things that you need to change within the system, and preparations need to be done, because sometimes you might need to have a user point for purified water place, but that then requires changes in the system to address this issue differently.
Right. So just maybe to give some background to people who were not involved in equipment qualification, maybe they just need some more information about some of the terms, right? So up till now, you were talking about design qualification, basically what you need, the user requirement specification. This is the prerequisite for the system. And the design qualification basically tells the manufacturer what you need, and there you have the discussion, what can be done, what cannot be done, and so on. And you talked also about the documentation that they should provide, the protocols, etc. And you mentioned that it's good idea to ask for those, and it's of course a really good idea to do it, but you need to be aware that we also talked about it in other podcasts with several other experts, for example, with Daniel Milek, that he said that he found that many companies put too much trust on the documentation of the vendors.
That is true.
So you really need to be careful with it. It's, of course, important to get the help, especially for the smaller companies that don't have so much experience, but you probably should have somebody from the inside that really understands it, if not take a consultant that helps with it, because what happens sometimes that the companies promise to provide you with all, they say, okay, we are doing everything for you, we will do the validation, qualification, don't worry about it, and then you get in trouble because what they provide you, it's not up to the standard. And sometimes the vendors are not pharma-specific providers. They provide for science, for laboratories, for research, and it's not always pharma.
I was going to say that whatever you decide about the documentation, I was going to address this later, but now you've mentioned it, whatever you decide about the documentation, it's always needed, going to have to be approved by the internal QA. So it will have to be in line with the quality management system, with the validation master plan, and so on. So it will have to be, and if changes need to be made, I know it's project specific. In my experience, I have had this experience with long-standing partners, and it was not a question of whether you receive the service that you're asking for, because it would be part of the understanding. And we would always get support from these vendors in a very good high level of service. But otherwise, it is always needed to have internal quality assurance approval of these documents and all the processes and all the steps, basically. It will have to be approved before going to the next stage. Have to have the documents, the protocols approved. So the design qualification have been completed by the functional design specification, and now you go through to the FAT, where also you have protocols, but you can make them yourself well.
So FAT factory acceptance test.
If this happens in the factory where the equipment has been built, because this provider of the equipment, the vendor, might be using or sourcing some of the materials or some of the services from other subcontractors, but they're putting all together in their facilities. So you go there with a team of engineers, validation experts from your side, QA, and in my experience with production personnel as well. I have been to this FATs as in capacity of production personnel. The point in FAT is to check whether all the parts of equipment are there, whether everything is working as supposed to be working, whether it's connected according to the PIDs, to the diagrams, piping and instrumentation diagrams that are in place, that its appearance is all right, so there are not any kind of damages on the surfaces or something else, that the system that is running the equipment is also working as designed or as required, and all these subunits need to be checked and to make sure that everything is done properly. And also there are tests that are very similar tests to the tests that are done during the qualification stages, just to make sure that the equipment is operational. So whenever there is any kind of open or outstanding issue, the presence of the people from the buyer side, from the pharmaceutical industry, their role there is to raise these issues and to address them on spot. So if you have long-standing communication with this vendor and you've worked on a number of projects, it's very easy because you know how they're operating, you know how you have built this communication, and these issues are resolved very quickly. And it's in both interests to be resolved quickly, because you don't want to waste time and then don't want to give impression that they don't care about their clients. But also, if any outstanding issues are still there, it needs to be put into the protocol as a deviation or any kind of remark. And if it's again, risk assessment is due. And if it's critical, you don't go through to the next stage until this issue is resolved. After that, there is transportation, which is also part of the technical agreement, and then you receive the unit at your place, and then these other qualifications take part. I've said it previously, but I'm just going to briefly address it, that you have to be prepared for all these activities on your side, because if you're not prepared, there will be delays that are just not working properly for anyone. There will be possibly technician or engineer to check that everything has been done, The installation of the equipment can be done in many different ways. You can it can be part of the technical agreement, and the vendor can install the equipment on your behalf in your premises. You can install it with your engineering team if you prefer it that way. You can hire some external company to do the installation. But once installation is done, there will be this first step that is also kind of part of the SAT or integral part of the whole process of qualification, which is the installation qualification. That means that this qualification needs to assure that the equipment have been installed properly, that all the different parts of the equipment have been connected, integrated properly, that the installations in means of electricity or compressed air or water or whatever it needs, or steam or light or whatever kind of need is there for the equipment, that these things are addressed and it's properly. So also during the installation qualification, you have the protocol. So it's either the protocol that quality assurance validation engineers have written, or it's the protocol that you have bought from the vendor. And it's according to your validation master plan and to your wider quality management system. And it's very important at this stage for the qualification stages that you have already decided who is going to be the crucial core team for this equipment. The core team means multifunctional team. It means of people from maintenance and engineering that are coming to see what's going on, to learn from the very process, because this is a process. The qualifications at site acceptance tests as well are, I mean, site acceptance tests is qualification is more regulatory based than site acceptance test is part of it, but also it's addressing commissioning issues, in my understanding. It's very important to include all these people from production, from quality assurance, from technical services possibly, so that they understand the capabilities and the operational ranges of the equipment and what it can and cannot do. Installation qualification, which is the first stage, so it has to go through according to approved protocol by the quality assurance team, and it has to address also the it has to include calibration of all the measuring instruments or sensors within the equipment. So this is the first calibration of the measuring instruments of the equipment. There will be questions or tick boxes or something. You need the technician or the engineering team will have to make measurements in means of critical signals, either electricity or light or pressure of air, pressure of gases, or water pressure, or whatever you need for the specific equipment. And they will need to measure these values and put them in the protocol and sign off as a proof that they've done it. If any outstanding issues are part of this, are happening at this stage, they have to be addressed properly. And validation master plan and other procedures, means of deviations, will have to have provided ways how to address these outstanding issues. So what do you do if there is something missing? For example, there is a critical part of equipment missing in your facility. It was there during the factory acceptance test. It's marked in the protocol that it was there, but now it's missing. It's probably lost somewhere, so you need to address that. Whether you stop the activities or you, if it's possible, again, it's a risk assessment process. Can you skip some of the activities and go on with others until you resolve the issue, or you stop there and you don't go further because this is a critical issue that cannot provide you with assurance that you are in state of control. Then after finishing all the tests that are either recommended by the internal quality assurance validation team or by the vendor, this protocol has to be approved by the QA again, so that it's formally approved that this phase of the qualification, the installation qualification, is finished and you can move on with the operational qualification. There will have to be also revision of risks again, because at the beginning I said that you have, and you said as well, that you have risk assessment all the time, but then you reiteratively address these risks to see whether there are new risks have appeared, or risks that were meant to be minor are now growing in severity, or some of the risks are actually non-existent and you just put them off. But this is very well-tuned machine. When you have a team that knows what it does, it's just, you know, doing this without question. The next phase is the operational qualification, which actually tests the ranges of the equipment. So it tests the process parameters and all the other parameters that are part of the equipment. Within the installation qualification, we'll also be addressing the computerized system, or the terminals or the consoles that are running the like human machine interface, or whatever kind of system that you're actually using to run the machine. Now this is the standard. Usually in the past it was just mechanical adjustment, but now we have all this electronic software-based parts of the equipment that are helping you run the equipment. So there will be tests on all the operational ranges and challenging those ranges in means of whether if you set a range, for example, for speed of the machine, you just measure that when you enter some certain value, that the reading is actually both by the sensors and another independent sensor are measuring the same value. When you enter a value that is out of range, that the machine will stop. When you affect safety operation of machine, the machine will also stop and give you appropriate alarms and so on. So the operational qualification is also running tests with, usually this is done with placebo, and you're testing the whether it's providing product within the operational regions of the machine. Because this is very important, because sometimes you might, I mean, this has obviously had to be addressed way before this, but the meaning of the operational qualification is to make sure that the operational range of the machine is actually giving you the product with the characteristics that you need it to be. So you cannot buy, I don't know, you cannot buy a mixer that is mixing, that is having, for example, engine of 1 kilowatt power, and you want to mix very viscous material there, because it's not going to work. You know, it's not going to do the mixing. This obviously had to be addressed early on within the user requirement specification, functional design specification, but now you're proving that the equipment is actually capable of doing what it needs to be doing. Again, this is within the protocol. You're entering the values that are measured or seen, or the machine is operated in, the times everyone signs off that is present there and is critical to the qualification as a personnel. There is a formal approval from QA, and again, if there are any outstanding issues, you go through risk management and decide whether you can go on, or you can just not close the operational qualification and go to performance qualification before closing the outstanding issues. This might sometimes be internal issues, issues within the company that you're powerful to change, but they are within your scope of work or your team's scope. But sometimes it might be something that is coming from the vendor or some other issue that has not been seen to be coming, and you need to challenge it on the spot. So the process is again the same. You approve the protocol, you go forward towards performance qualification, which is now making sure that you have a real product in place, and you're doing the tests. You're setting the machine, the parameters, so as to prove that you're actually, that it can produce what you want it to produce. Some companies are running the performance qualification as the first step of validation of process. If that is the case, that can be done. And this batch that is going to be produced can be possibly put on market after finishing the validation stages, but it needs to be so proscribed and documented properly. By this, I'm saying this because before this stage, if you're using the performance qualification as the first validation batch, then you need to clean and probably complete the cleaning validation, because you don't want to produce product on equipment that has not been cleaned.
That's a really good
The cleaning of the equipment will have happened in the very beginning when you have installed the equipment. You will, if there is an automated washing unit, you will test the washing unit through the qualification as well. But if you're producing a validation batch and you're intending to put it on the market later on, before producing that batch, you will have to have completed cleaning validation. So it's part of the validation master plan, and it's addressed properly and accordingly before doing this. All the tests have been done for as per cleaning validation, so the critical points have been identified. Swabs have been taken, riboflavin tests, toxicological data have been, whatever that there is about this previous, even if it's run on a placebo, you will have to have done the validation, cleaning validation completed. The other thing is that I just come across a few days ago, and it's very interesting that interesting point. There was a survey on people that were included in qualifications, and equipment qualification is one of the areas within the pharmaceutical industry that is still run, even though there are electronic quality management systems. 78%, I think, or 77% of the professionals included in equipment qualification still prefer to do it on paper. So to do it in printed out protocols, even if they have electronic quality management system, they will print out the protocols and then write by hand. It's curious and it's very interesting how to address this. Mm-hmm. I mean,
what
why
do you prefer?
I have worked on paper based system that was turned into a hybrid system, and is trying to, within the company that I've been working with, is trying to become more electronic based, or not more, but paperless quality system. For now, it was run on paper, and I understand the why people want to do it on paper, because it feels more accessible in effect. I don't know why. It just feel more confident to go through the whole. In front of your eyes, you have all these
huge folders,
Right.
And you're looking into if there is any outstanding issue. And I think that's the problem. It's more visible now. But companies that are providing electronic softwares in means of quality management system are also addressing this issue, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's going to come
right. Up, you know, but I think the issue here, so from my experience from building qualification and equipment qualification and etc., that the protocols themselves are usually not part of the system. So you can upload them to the system, right, as PDFs, but you don't have a real qualification system, let's say, where you can do some custom qualification requirements, where you can input it and then click on the click on what has been done to confirm the tests. So that's why usually you need to print it out, and I feel it really it's a shame, because I think it would be great if there were such a system, because from my experience when I had to review such huge folders, so there were during the SATs and the EQ and OQ, so you basically get folders that are like I don't know if you can see it in the camera, but I don't know. It doesn't fit in the camera because they're so huge. Sure. And then you need, of course, to store them and to archive them. And I think that's good to go into some digitalization, but I don't think that there are systems that provide such a service right now. Or are you familiar with such services?
I'm not, but... Because the survey was addressing this in a manner that what would you prefer? To do it.
Right.
So I'm guessing that it might be possible if the internal quality assurance team is building the protocols themselves, because every protocol is very specific to the equipment. So you cannot use the template as for every equipment.
Right. But you need then a software that allows the customization, basically. So you need some building blocks, for example, and that you like a form builder in some sort. Then you can build something like this that is basically electronical. Of course. So I think people got used to go through it by hand and just. But I think for the future, I think digitalization would be better, because you kill so many trees only with one qualification, because it's really so much paperwork.
But it's also Jan, more practical. If one can make the system more practical, then you can go through all the phases more quickly, because you have electronic signatures.
Right.
You don't need to physically transport the folders to QA and then follow procedures.
Because you have so many signatures and you cannot review it simultaneously. And I know it also because when you have the qualification, there are so many people that need to sign it. The engineering team, the operational team, the QA, and so on. And then you need to distribute this folder. Such a huge folder, it usually takes a week, maybe even more, to review it really well. Per department, it means, or per folder, it may take you like a month to finalize the review, because you cannot do it simultaneously across departments. So I think it's also one issue with that.
And also, if you're qualifying equipment for sterile products, make sure that all the movement of this documentation will be happening in a way that will not affect, you know, coming in out of clean rooms to other, and whatever that means will not affect the grade of the cleanliness of the clean rooms. So it might be a physically effortful stage, but it's something to look forward to, you know. We'll see what the industry will come up with. This was just curiosity, because I was wondering what I would want to, and the first reaction is like, of course, you you want to deal with the devil, you know, just have the you have done this in paper and you know what to expect and how it looks like and how to deal with it.
Yeah, but I think also otherwise, the issue is that you don't know the alternative, right? So it was not presented to you. So I don't know, you don't know how it would be. But I think if you would ask somebody who worked 15 years with a paper-based deviation system or change control system, and then worked 5 years with an electronic one, I'm pretty sure he won't tell you, I want to get back to the to paper. Exactly. Pretty sure that it won't happen, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And also, it's if you integrate this electronic solution possible, that I don't know about, probably there is some on the market, it might integrate with all these other issues. You know, it might integrate within the quality management system in a way that you address the outstanding issues in a very more efficient, in a more efficient way. Anyways, so the performance qualification might also be, if you don't have any other remarks on this, I would go on.
Yeah, please. So I think, so we almost came to the... to the end of the qualification. So before you continue to finalize your thoughts about the performance qualification, so there are quite fine lines between the OQ and PQ. And I know that in some equipment, sometimes you can just merge them together. In some issues, but then there are also, but when you can't, when it's a really critical system and it's really involved in the material preparation and manufacturing, so it's as you said, you really need to differentiate the phases. And so can you address again the fine lines between the OQ and PQ? So I know that sometimes you said you use the OQ to challenge the system, and sometimes you go also over the specifics, the narrow specification, right?
Range.
So you go
the ranges.
Right. So you go above the ranges that you would use in practice, because you need really to stress the system and make sure that the system works with the whole specification which you got according to the manual, right? And then in the performance, you would go to your own narrow specification.
One of the findings of regulatory inspectors regarding equipment qualification and validation within the last few years was that the worst case scenarios were not challenged properly, or I don't remember the exact formulation, but this was one of the things that was addressed. That means that either during qualification or during process validation, some companies would not challenge the operational extremes of the equipment and of the product. That means operational extremes might mean so many things, but I know that within the last few years in my previous company, we would especially the technical services would include all these challenges during even process validations. So that means you test the during the transfer and validations, you test the system. What if you run with the maximum allowed speed or flow rate, if it's reasonable? What if you run with the minimal speed? What happens if the machine stops and loses electricity or something? So you intentionally stop the machine to see whether it can go on, because this happens within operation, you know, machines stop, you need to do some kind of adjustments or so on and so on, or there is some kind of defect that the engineering team needs to address. But during the qualification, you test these ranges And also you get more understanding of what it means to your normal operation after you've introduced or integrated this project within its life cycle. So if you're doing operational qualification on with placebo, you do challenge the things. You do challenge critical parameters to see whether, and also the equipment itself will come with a range from the producer, from the vendor. It will come with a range. The instrumentation within the equipment will be calibrated to detect things or to measure signals within a range. So what happens if you go below that range, whether there will be some signal stopping the equipment or telling you, showing you. You need to make sure that you have these signals so that you don't operate the equipment in a way that it might not signal you that you're doing something wrong or you're operating outside the operational range of the equipment. That's the rationale behind it. And during performance qualification, you can do all the same tests. Some companies I know that can afford to use the performance qualification as optimization run or just, you know, exercise for their teams to make people. This is one of the critical issues as well, especially when you're introducing new technology that you don't have knowledge about. There will be resistance by operators, line managers, supervisors, and so on, and maintenance personnel as well. Not resistance in means of they don't want it, but insecurities in means that they don't know everything about it. And if the company can afford to lose some material to exercise with all these people and to basically make them comfortable working and then use that activity to build the SOPs for operation and for cleaning of the equipment. Because again, you need some experience and understanding of the equipment and the technology if it's new to your organization before creating SOPs SOPs for cleaning or for operation of the equipment. And then integration of all these documents from this particular equipment within the quality system will also need some effort. What I meant by, let me come back again to the performance qualification before moving on with some other not that regulatory, but things that I think are important to use with this process. After finishing the performance qualification, and this is probably part of the SAT, and I mean SAT might be the checkup. The SAT might be the same thing that is done on an FAT on site, but sometimes it makes all the activities or some of the activities that are part of qualification. So it's either addressed as an SAT or during the equipment qualification. But after finishing all these phases, there will have to be formal approval of all the documentations and all the documentation and all the activities that have been done, that all the outstanding issues have been addressed. And there will be formal closure of the qualification process so that there is sign-off by QA and maintenance and everyone else involved, production possibly, that the qualification is completed. And now we can put integrate the equipment within its life cycle. This is important both ways, because the equipment provider or the vendor will also want to have closed the project. In order to closing the project, they will need your sign off that you have accepted. You have the commission is done. The commission is completed. The qualification and the SAT is completed. So they're closing the project. All the outstanding issues have been addressed. and you can from then on use the equipment for validation and production. You need to make sure that all the documents within the quality system are in place when you do these things. If you're running with a product and then, pardon me, you're using the performance qualifications validation, you have to make sure that all the validation plans, validation protocols are in place in the proper time, the materials, the gap analysis have been done, and so on. The risks have been addressed. The control strategy have been put in place, and so on and so on. I have not addressed that after putting the equipment into its life cycle, you will probably want to address several issues within the control strategy. That means requalification of the equipment, recalibration of sensors or critical instruments. So this will also address other documents or processes within the quality management system, and you need to be aware of it. You know, you need to be aware that you need to do this. Possibly cleaning monitoring as well, and it might need it depending on company's policies on these things and company manual and validation master plan, how you address these issues. But you have to be there are two criteria that are required. That is some probably within the validation master plan that is strictly set what when you do recalibration and requalification. So you say it's not just left on case by case. It has to be strictly provided. And the second criteria is that it has to be scientifically sound or based on a study or any kind of understanding of the process. That means that no one will tell you that you have to do it once a year, once every 6 months or once in 3 months. You like to do it once, I don't know, different intervals for different kind of equipment with different criticality, different sensors and so on for calibration. Recalibration, but then whatever you decide, you need to provide scientifically sound background, or you do a study at the beginning, which is more rigorous and more strict, and then you use that data to set your control strategy for further. All right, at last I wanted to address the potential of equipment qualification as a team building activity. I have been through several of these qualifications that were actually introducing new technology that we were not at the time familiar with. And it was requiring a very steep learning curve for everyone included. Operators, line managers, me as a supervised production shift manager at the time, and maintenance personnel, engineering team, quality assurance, validations, quality control, and so on. So everyone that is included needed to learn quickly, to get on board and then get it done as soon as possible. We tended to include as many people as possible. Sometimes this is not feasible because you have restrained space, or it's if it's a sterile environment, you don't want too many people messing around the equipment when you're doing critical tests, assuring the sterility. But whenever possible, I would want to have all these people on board so that they'll all learn together and to the same standard, because this is a very nice, all these tests that are run are actually very good in, good possibility to learn about the capabilities and the operational ranges and what the equipment is capable to do. So then within next projects, you know that you can do something or cannot do something, or you need something additional to do something. For example, I know there are equipments that you can use for number of operations, but you need to know whether you're equipped and you have the knowledge or the equipment is equipped to do this. For example, you have Fluid bed dryer. You can use fluid bed dryer for granulation. You can use it for drying only. You can use it for spray granulation. Sometimes you can use it for pelletization, but you need to know that. And you would not know that if you were not, I mean, you would learn it, but it's always good to have all the people that are making these decisions early on during the qualification so that they're on board and they know the capabilities. Also, it's creating this, I want to call it ownership of the equipment. And I've learned through the years that whenever any group or team of people feel that they, and usually this is the core team, the first team that you build around the equipment, that you've trained these operators, line managers, maintenance personnel, engineering team, supervisors, they're the first team that have been trained, and then they're providing training for other people. They feel it's their own ownership, but they also feel that they need to make sure that everything is in line. They're keeping it in the proper state, the equipment. They're having ownership of the quality of everything that is going around with the equipment. And sometimes there are persons of contact that are experts. So we've seen that the whole structure of the equipment, I try to be to explain it as much as possible.
Vlatko, thank you very much for all this information. And I think we covered really a qualification in their basics from A to Z, and you provided really interesting tips and information throughout the whole process. And I'm pretty sure people will find it really helpful. And I think that everybody who does qualification or gonna do qualification, he must listen to this podcast, because I think it really equals to a lot of time of experience or a really good lecture. So I think it's really amazing information what you have provided. So thank you very much again for that.
Thank you.